fish.
Better not be as much as you love me.
Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR, 1-855-573-8227, and donate your unwanted car, truck, RV, or motorcycle to KPFT. We'll pick it up. Your tax-deductible donation entitles you to KPFT membership, hair, luster, and teeth. Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR, 1-855-573-8227. Details at kpft.org. Hair with luster and teeth may not be available.
Ha ha!
Thursday evening, and you've tuned into a place that used to kick off your week on Mondays at 6 a.m., but now is going to help kickstart your weekend every Thursday night at 10, thanks to your support. This is So What's Your Story? Our listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown. So What's Your Story? Puts the spotlight on soul-inspiring tellers, both pros and newbies, some of whom could be you, who engage us with revealing personal stories and beloved folk tales by taking us, alluring us on enchanted journeys and then returning us safely to the present. We're going to debut this evening with folk tales because they encompass those stories that so many of us love, the tales we heard growing up and the ones we want to keep telling our children, and our children to their children, and hopefully with no end in sight. Folklore, synonymous with folk tale, is so much a part of our life. It's often defined as forms of expression, complete with the flavorful fabrications that come with a storyteller's license to brew a tale and make it their own. In short, the artistic concoctions that oftentimes result in the best folk tales is one reason it's hard, if not impossible, to track down the original author of tales. But folklore is an essential part of our culture because these magical yarns help keep customs and traditions alive. And I can't think of anyone better to help us explore folk tales than my guest, seasoned librarian Sally Bates Goodrow. Sally grew up in Illinois reading all of Andrew Lang's fairy tale books long after others grew out of them. Her interest in telling stories began in library school in Madison, Wisconsin. Sally was one of the founders of the Houston Storytellers Guild in 1986, a terrific group of which I proudly serve as president. She also serves on the board. She enjoys telling stories to kids that include active participation, and Scottish, Irish, and Anglo tales are her favorites, and she loves telling those to both children and adults alike. She's exceptionally busy and a real sport and friend for joining us here this evening, and a little bribery never hurt anybody. Right, Sally?
That's right.
Right. I just had a dollar on me, but I'll try to get you some more a little bit later, I promise. Sally, you know, you've been on the show before, and I know that that you have studied storytelling formally, kind of, sort of, but in library school. Talk to us a little bit about how you got interested doing it in library school. I assume when we talk Madison, Wisconsin, you're talking about the University of Wisconsin.
That's right. That's okay. Right. And I did, I lived in a house with seven housemates, and one of them was a storyteller, and we had the Madison Storytelling Group meet in the house.
Wow.
And then also the library school offered a storytelling class, which I audited. So that was kind of my introduction. I didn't actually start telling stories till I moved to Houston. Yeah.
The idea of storytelling, was that sort of an impetus of you becoming a librarian, or was it the other way around?
I would say that they are kind of parallel. You know, originally I was an archivist, so it was more the historical kinds of stories that
gotcha.
I liked.
Now, you enjoy folktale variants, so you like variations of folktales, all sorts of different versions of things, right? And you're going to be sharing a couple of versions of a famous tale tonight. And tell us, first of all, what we mean by variants, and then I'm going to ask you to tell us your first story.
Well, what's amazing about folktales is that you can find the same story in so many different places. It's kind of like if the story were a person, it would have different clothes depending on where you found it. It's the same basic elements in the story, mm-hmm. but they show up so many different places in different cultures and different countries and different regions yeah. with different details.
Different motifs or same motif?
Sometimes the same, yeah. sometimes different.
Okay, because all stories have similar ingredients. They have the tension, protagonist, but you're saying that they do differ even with the same the same story, the same classic tale.
Right.
Okay. Give us a sample. What's your story?
Well, I'm going to tell two different versions of a Cinderella story tonight. There are over 1,000 variants of Cinderella stories collected all over the world.
Wow, that's a lot of glass slippers.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a lot of glass slippers.
And the two that I'm telling are actually both from about the same region. One is from Northern England and one is from Scotland. And the first one is called Cap of Rushes. So there once was a rich man, and he had 3 daughters. And one day he said, "How much do you love me, my dears?" And the oldest one looked at him and said, "Oh, Papa, I love you better than all the pretty dresses in all the world." And the second one said, "Oh, Daddy, I love you better than all the shiny jewels in all the world." And the third one said, "Oh, Papa, I love you so much. I love you as meat loves salt." As meat loves salt? As meat loves salt? "Why, you don't love me at all," he said, "and in my house you will stay no more." And he drove her out there and then and shut the door in her face. Well, she walked and walked until she came to a marshy place and gathered a lot of rushes. And she wove them and she plaited them and she made herself a kind of a sort of a cloak with a hood to hide her shining hair and fine clothes. And then she walked until she came to a good house, a house just as fine as the one she had left, and she became a servant there. They hired her on as a scullery maid, and she washed the pots and scrubbed the saucepans, and they called her Cap of Rushes, because she would not say her name. Well, there was to be a dance a little ways off, and all the servants were allowed to go and look on at all the grand people, but Cap of Rushes said she was too tired to go, and they should go without her. But when they had disappeared, she offed with her Cap of Rushes. She cleaned herself, and away she went to the dance, and there was none so lovely as she was. Well, the young man who lived in the house where she was a servant fell in love with her. He would not look at anyone else, nor dance with anyone else. And when she would not tell him her name, he took his ring off and put it on her finger. But before the dance was done, off she slipped, and when the others returned home, she was pretending to be asleep with her Cap of Rushes on. Well, the young man, he started looking for that young woman that he had met. He went from house to house and place to place, but no one knew who she was, and by he got so sick for love of her, he could not even get out of bed. Well, one morning, Cap of Rushes managed to slip the ring he had given her into his bowl of gruel, and when his spoon hit that ring and he drew it out, he soon had her up in front of him, and he said, "Where did you get this ring?" And she said, "From the one who gave it to me." And he looked at her and said, "Then who are you?" She said, "I'll show you." And she offed with her Cap of Rushes and stood before him, and he knew who she was. And they were to be married in a little time. And everyone was invited, including Cap of Rushes' father. But on the morning of the wedding, she went to the cook and she said, "I want you to dress every dish without any salt." And the cook said, "Oh, that'll be rare nasty." And Cap of Rushes said, "Still, it must be done." And so they were married, and after they were married, the company sat down to a great feast, but none of the food had any taste to it. And Cap of Rushes' father, he began to weep. And the young master, he stood up and he said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Oh," he said, "I had a daughter. And I asked her how much she loved me, and she said, 'As meat loves salt.' And I drove her away, for I thought she did not love me, but now I see she loved me best of all. And she could be dead, for all I know." But Cap of Rushes, she stood up, and she said, "No, father, here she is." And she went to him, and she put her arms around him, and so they lived happily ever after.
Beautiful, 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 beautiful. And I've heard you tell that story before. Let me ask you this, Sally. You know, there are many different versions of Cinderella, right?
Yes.
You call them Cinderella stories, but let's just call it Cinderella. What makes the classic a classic? In other words, we know the typical story of Cinderella, the traditional story. What makes that the common?
Well, my first impulse is to say Disney.
There's a good chance of that.
The story that most of us know is from the Disney movie, which is from the French Perrault's version of the story,
is it?
Which may actually some scholars think have actually been brought back to this country from the Native Americans who lived in the U.S.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Now, where did Cinderella originate?
Well,
do we know? I mean, is it?
Nobody knows for sure.
Nobody knows for sure.
The oldest written version is some people, again, say Ye Shen, which is a Chinese story written down in about 650.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
This is old stuff.
It is.
Folk tales speak to you, don't they? Yeah. I mean, there are all sorts of genres, but folk tales really do speak to you. Yeah. And as you know, I love folk tales, but I can't tell them. I just don't tell them well. And I watch you tell them, and they're really beautiful. They really unfold.
Thank you.
As you tell them, I'm more into personal stories, but folk tales are really difficult. And I know they speak to you. What do they say to you? What do folk tales say to you when you choose them?
Well, why? I think just the fact that folk tales survive means that they speak to all of us. I mean, the themes and the issues in folk tales, the reason that they're still around, the folk tales have survived, is because they mean something to us.
Yeah.
And the fact that they've traveled and been clothed in so many different clothes, I think, also says something about their staying power. I think, you know, all ages, there are folk tales that relate to all ages and stages of a person's life and growth, from, you know, separating from your parent to letting your child go. You know, it's just anything that you are interested in is in a folk tale somewhere.
To a lot of tellers and scholars alike, folk tales contain fairy tales, fables, myths, legends, and a lot more. Is there anything really unique about a folktale? When we think about the term folktale, is there anything that sets that aside from those other kinds of stories?
Well, I'm not a university professor or anything, and I haven't even studied formally, but my impression is that myths are generally considered the sacred stories of a people. Mm-hmm. There was a theory for a while that folktales were just corrupted myths. And I don't think that that's really believed so much anymore.
Yeah.
But folktales are just stories that people, you know, they got passed along. Somebody enjoyed it. It might have had a grain of truth in it at one time. But somebody told it to somebody else who told it to somebody else. I consider fairy tales, kind of a subset of folktales. Those are the stories that have some magic in them.
Right. Well, and I think that's a great description, Sally. I'm a university professor, and frankly, I don't know that much about it at all, because it's really hard to do research about all these genres. For example, when my students ask me, I tell them that myths are designed primarily to help to explain the inexplicable. Because after all, these gods did all sorts of strange things, and we have to explain them. We have to explain hurricanes, and we have to explain love, and we have to explain death, and we have to explain the things that we now turn to for science. And even then, they're very inexplicable. A fantasy, I think, tends to introduce one world and journey into another, like the Alice in Wonderland or Wizard of Oz. Dorothy, we're not in Kansas anymore. We're in a new world. And then takes them back to another one safely. Fables and folk tales, I think, are sometimes a little confusing, but I think fables mostly have animals, which personify the human characters.
And tend to be lesson stories.
Yeah, they tend to be. A lot of parables, right? Yeah. Aesop's fables, for example, which are always, always wonderful. But fairy tales intrigue me. Fairy tales, as I think about them, and as I tell them, and as I read about them, they seem to have familiar surroundings. And they have very typical human tension. So, for example, we've all seen the woods, we've seen trees, we know what real time is. Enter Hansel and Gretel. They're lost, they're mad at their mother, they walk in the woods. It's very familiar, and it's sort of scary in a way.
Right.
It makes it very scary. Some think it's really cruel when the witch dies by being pushed into the oven, but in a fairy tale, you have to have that kind of closure.
Absolutely.
You have to have that closure. Imagine an ending with, and the witch escaped, and we'll never know where she's hiding, so get a good night's sleep, little Susie. I don't think so. You know, slam that person in the oven, and shut the door, and make sure she's dead as a doornail, right? I mean,
Absolutely.
That's what you want.
Yeah. And that, And it's all very symbolic. I mean, I think that's another reason folktales survive, is that there's so many powerful symbols in them.
Absolutely. You know, W.H. Auden said that the way to tell fairy tales is to throw yourself in. And I think you do that very well. I really do. And C.K. Chesterton said it best. He said that fairy tales are more than true, not because they tell us that dragons exist, but as we know, because dragons can be beaten. So. Yeah. Many of our guests are been from the Storytellers Guild, and I want everybody to know something about our group in a moment, but I want everybody to know right now that they are listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1. I'm Hank Rubicek with my guest Sally Bates Goodrow at our brand new time, and we even have Jeff Hamm out there.
Yay.
And yeah, we have him as an engineer, and you know, he's not on any drugs or anything. He's sitting there, and he's absolutely doing a great job, and we really, really appreciate it. We hold the monthly SWAT. But talk to us a little bit about the Storytellers Guild. You were one of their founders, right?
Yeah. And the Storytellers Guild is a group of people who just love to tell and listen to stories.
Yeah.
And at our meetings, you can come to listen. You can come to learn a little bit more about telling stories, or you can just come if you have something you want to try out with
Absolutely.
A friendly group of folks.
We are a great group of folks. We hold a monthly story swap on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at St. Andrew's House. That is at 1811 Heights Boulevard. Any and every story lover, from starters to stars, belong to this group. So you better get there. We're the greatest group in town, believe me. And check out our site at www.houstonstorytellers.org for all the fun happenings. You use participation in some of your stories. Give us an example of what you mean by participation with the kids.
Well, when I have a story that works well for younger kids, I enjoy putting in some repetition or some way for them to join in with me, to repeat a phrase that recurs, which a lot of the nursery tales do have a lot of recurrent phrases, or a song, or sometimes if they're really little, like little kids, they don't like to talk, but they will do a gesture with you, or they will make noise, they'll clap their hands or slap their legs or whatever.
Yeah.
So
that's
there are lots of ways to involve them, and they love that.
Storytelling is such an interactive process. It's not just a teller standing up telling a story. You have to be engaged. You have to be engaged. And so many people don't realize how much fun it is to really embrace that audience. You've got another variation for us of, I guess, the Cinderella story, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And this story has a male protagonist, which not as many of the Cinderella stories do, but this is a Scottish tale. Now, there was once a family of farmers, and they had seven sons. And the youngest of their sons, oh, he was so mistreated by the other ones. They would regularly beat him up and insult him. They said, "You are useless, and worse than useless, all you do is sit by the fire and make up stories." And so they called him Ossipottle. But Ossipottle knew that someday he would not only tell the stories, but be the hero of his own story. Now, one day, terrible news came from the castle, for a great sea serpent, one of the nine plagues of mankind, had shown up just off the coast. This huge monster would yawn every morning seven times, and once it had finished its yawning, it would wreak havoc on the shore. Its long forked tongue would come out and pick up people or cattle and eat them whole. Its long tail could sweep an entire fishing village into the sea. And its great teeth could smash whole fishing fleets into matchsticks. Well, the people did not know what to do. And the king had offered half of his kingdom and the hand of his only daughter to anyone who would fight the monster. But anyone who looked at the creature turned tail and ran. Well, finally, the magician who worked for the king said, perhaps, if they sacrificed the king's daughter, the princess, to the monster, it would go away and leave them alone. But the king said he himself would fight the monster before he would sacrifice his daughter. And so the people feared they would lose both their king and their princess. Well, the time was set for the king to fight the monster. And the night before, Asipatl took a horse from his father's stable and rode it like the wind to the coast, carrying only an iron pot and in it a piece of glowing peat from the fire. Well, when he got to the shore, he saw where the soldier guarded the king's rowboat to take him out the next day to fight the monster. And he stole that rowboat away from that soldier, and he rowed it out with his pot beside him, way out to where the monster was like a hulking monster, like a hulking island against the night sky. And he waited for the dawn to come. Well, sure enough, as soon as the dawn began to creep up in the east, the monster began its seven great yawns. But Asipatl did not row away from the creature, only closer. And when the monster yawned and the water came into his mouth, Asipatl and his little boat went into the monster's mouth. And then Asipatl began to row, and he rowed as fast and as hard as he could, deep, deep down the monster, inside his throat, deeper and deeper, until he saw the monster's liver there, oily. And he took out his metal pot, and he ran to the liver, and he dug a hole in it with his knife, tipped the burning peat into the hole, and blew on it until it caught fire in the oil of the monster's liver. And then he ran, hell for leather, back to the boat and jumped in just in time, because as soon as the serpent felt that burning within it, it began to retch. It vomited Asipatl, his boat, and everything else in its stomach out into the water. And Asipatl clung to the boat and watched as the monster began its death agony. Its great head snapped up so high it bruised the moon. Its long tail smashed on the ground, making the channel that now sits between Norway and Denmark. Its teeth spewed in all directions, making the Shetland and the Orkney Islands. And then finally, in its last agony, it curled itself upon itself. And it turned into the island that is now Iceland, still with the fires burning within it. Well, by now there was a huge crowd gathered at the seashore. And when Asipatl drew his boat up to the shore, they came to him, gathered him up on their shoulders, and took him straight to the king, who knighted him right there and then. And Asipatl married the princess. And he and the princess, long after the king had died of a comfortable old age, they ruled both wisely and well.
Beautiful, beautiful story. That is amazing that it came from the same concept, the same Cinderella concept, right? About a male Cinderella.
Yeah, the element of the mistreated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are a lot of things that are missing. Like in the other Cinderella stories, there might be a helper like the fairy godmother or various, there's no dance, but it's still a Cinderella story.
Again, I'm thinking a little earlier you were talking about the sort of participation that you do with kids. And storytelling is such a great learning tool. It's really used as a pedagogy. It's really used to get kids to learn a number of different things. You mentioned earlier about interaction, for example, participation. It teaches kids about vocabulary, about one's culture. It gives them a chance to learn how to cultivate their own speech tools. It also allows adults and children to interact with each other. And there's a real treat, right? Mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes about the impact fairy tales has on learning comes from Albert Einstein. And he says, if you want children to be intelligent, read them fairy tales. If you want them to be more intelligent, read them more fairy tales. And this is Hank Rubicek with my guest, Sally Bates Goodrow, on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 Houston, 89.5 and Galveston, 89.7 in Huntsville, and 90.3 for our friends in Livingston. Now, a little tip for telling, a quickie segment when we learn something about storytelling by answering a question sent to us by a listener. Monica from Houston writes, Dr. Hank, your show is too cool. Well, too cool is pretty incredibly cool. Thank you, Monica. I think I paid her to say that. I don't know. I don't know who she is, but that was so nice. So nice. I want to take my babies 3 and 5 to the kind of story time that Leona talked about last week. Where was that? Well, my guest 2 weeks ago, librarian Leona Hoogsberg, you know who she is very well, is to whom Monica refers. Monica, I don't have Leona's permission to give out her email, but she tells stories at Kendall Library, and the number there is 832-393-1880. Again, that's 832-393-1880. It's at 609 Eldridge. To Monica and anyone interested, lots of libraries and bookstores, such as Blue Willow Bookshop and Memorial, for example, have regular story hours for children. But Sally, you can offer a little insight in this, right? What kind of libraries have story time for children?
The easiest thing to do is to go to the library website of the library that you usually go to, which might be a Houston Public or a Harris County Library, and all of us have listings of the programs that we have and the times and places for them.
Fabulous. So great, and thank you, Monica, and all parents. That is such a great idea.
Yes.
Do that with your kids. That's terrific. If you have questions about storytelling or my guests, send them to me at Ruby, R-O-U-B-E-Y story@gmail.com, and I'm going to answer them on the air. And if you have stories that you'd like to tell, which are in 4 to 6 minute segments, and you'd like to be a guest on So What's Your Story, send me a quick blurb about the personal story or folktale you want to tell, and send them to the same address. Again, that is Ruby, R-O-U-B-E-Y, story@gmail.com, and I'll respond to you as quickly as I can. And get your questions on paper and get ready to give me a call, because eventually we are going to do some call-ins. We're not going to start it next week, but I think the week after we're going to do some call-ins. So many of you are interested in asking questions about storytelling, and I think that's the best way to facilitate those needs. You know, folktales can also spawn from personal stories. Those goofy, crazy, insane, insidious, dizzy, seedy, eccentric members of your family, and we all have them, they can unfold into some bona fide folk heroes with the help of your imagination. Nothing but the act of scheduling is bringing Sally's husband David to the show next Thursday. It's not really a coincidence. Believe me, it's not
it's
a couple's thing. It's just all right. It's all that's exactly what it is. For his signature story and song, you're going to love that. And you're not going to want to miss it. Sally, you were terrific this evening. Thank you so much for your stories. This is always a pleasure. We want to get so many people from the Guild on the show. I want everybody to know that I am trying my very best to solicit as many wonderful children out there in the Houston area who are so terribly creative to be on the show primarily November and December around the holiday times. I'm going out to Johnston Middle School tomorrow morning to talk to some of their fabulous teachers and get some kids over here as well. Thank you for your stories and your insights, as always, Sally. Make KPFT a part of every day, and story lovers, make it a habit. I'm thinking an addiction, actually, to tune in every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and ease into the weekend right. Stay tuned for Scooter and the Inner Side. Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank Rubicek, always reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Have a good night.